This message is brought to you by DoNotAge.org, the longevity research organisation that's on a mission to extend health span for as many people as possible via products that actually work. Start your journey today at DoNotAge.org and use code LAMA for a 10% discount. That's LLAMA.
As we start looking at the realities of living into our 80s and 90s without some artificial intelligence, some augmentation of our lives, we may just not be equipped to be able to handle life that far ahead.
Hello and welcome again to the Live Long and Master Aging podcast. I'm Peter Bowes, and after this episode, I can guarantee that you will see your bathroom in an entirely new light. That's the smart bathroom of the future, which could help us all live long and healthy lives. This is another episode of the LAMA podcast recorded at the recent conference of the USC Center for Body Computing. My guest is Eric Olson, Director of Design at Carton Design, which is a Los Angeles-based, research-driven product innovation company. And it's a company that's been spending quite a lot of time studying our routines and ceremonies around toileting and hygiene. Apparently, those daily rituals in the connected world could prove to be lifesavers or life extenders. So let's meet Eric to find out how. Eric Olson, welcome to the LAMA podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So this is intriguing, the bathroom of the future. How did you come up with this?
Well, honestly, we, as product designers, work in a number of different industries as consultants. One of those is in bathroom fixtures and bathroom equipment. Probably on the same day or sometimes during the same week, we're also working on life-saving medical equipment and implantables and all sorts of other types of technology. And it occurred to us that it might be a very logical fit for technology working for better health to make its way into the bathroom.
So before we get into the detail, and I'm fascinated to hear it, but before we get into that, just tell me a little bit about yourself and your career journey to this point.
Sure. Trained as an industrial designer, always been in design and from an art background. And as anyone who's familiar with industrial design, product design knows, it's a profession and it's a discipline that's really focused on being user-centric, that putting the users of products first and using them as the genesis and the inspiration for products, as opposed to the other way around, which would be finding a technology and then foisting upon people and hoping that they implement it into their lives. So as part of being an industrial designer and as a part of our practice, I've found that it was a good fit for my personality, which is a empathetic kind of a person, a people person, and it's a good fit for me to be able to create things with a purpose, healthcare, even better purpose, but I'm happy to do things like headphones and chairs and the other stock and trade of product design as well.
Have you always been a tinkerer and an inventor?
Yes, and a drawer. Grew up without a television set, and I think my mother likes to take credit for that being the genesis of drawing and putting ideas down on paper.
So at what age did you start watching television?
As soon as I went to college. Went to college, lived with a bunch of friends who had a television, and they couldn't pry me away from it. So I think I made up for entire childhood of no television in the 4 years of university.
As a child, you must have been aware of television.
Oh, of course.
Your friends. How did you deal with that?
I would just get sucked in like a magnet whenever I went over to their house.
Oh,
they would try to drag me out.
Still saw TV, but at their house.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd go over to their house, and then they would say, come on, let's go outside and ride our bikes. Oh, no, let's keep watching this show.
But did you, at home, you still respected your parents' wishes?
Didn't have a choice. No television in the house.
Right. So. And you didn't moan about it?
Oh, I'm sure I did.
Oh, you did?
I'm sure I did. Every time somebody talked about something at school that I knew nothing about.
So when you went to college, in terms of this sort of tinkering side and the notion that you wanted to invent things and change things, and especially stuff that had a practical application. How did you move forward with your education?
Well, I was lucky enough to find a program at University of California, Los Angeles that had a design track, a design focus, not product design per se. And as part of that program, we did everything from drawing to weaving to ceramics to building any number of things. A very, very broad program, which was exciting. And then while I was going to school there, I was exposed to Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, which is a fairly well-known for their product design and transportation design programs. And so later found myself up there getting what we like to call boot camp, more of a practical training in the actual skills of modern product design.
All right, well, let's get into what the bathroom of the future is going to look like. And when I first heard about this, of course, my thought, and I'm sure the same with everyone, is to actually think of your own bathroom and how it actually hasn't changed over the decades. If you really think about it, it has a very simple, practical purpose, much of which involves water, cleaning yourself, and doing what you do in a bathroom. The basic tools just haven't changed. There's only one thing in my bathroom that has changed, and that is the digital weighing scales that will tell me how many pounds I weigh, what my body fat is, and what my body mass index is, and I can sync that with my phone. But that is the only piece of equipment in my bathroom that I can actually pinpoint that's maybe the electric toothbrush. But apart from that, things just haven't changed.
Right, indeed. You're an early adopter by having one device in your bathroom. So I think the opportunity for the bathroom does not necessarily imply that it is on a fast track, because you're right. The cycle, I think, statistically, if you talk to a home building council, the cycle of remodeling and refreshing a bathroom is, you know, maybe every 10 years, something like that. Maybe if you have the opportunity. And some places you're not even allowed to do that. So certainly there are going to be big gaps in time before major changes can get implemented. I mean, case in point is, although there are already toilets out on the market that are smart toilets that can do pretty amazing things like heat the seat and react to your presence and do all these great things, many people don't have a power outlet anywhere near their toilet to be able to run power to it. So it will certainly take a while before these things are implemented. I think our vision is probably 20 years out. Maybe my son's kids will actually have the opportunity to have this connected experience.
I still don't know whether I'm comfortable with heated toilet seats or not. I've used a heated toilet seat and it just seems a little weird still.
Yeah, I don't disagree. If you travel to Asia, you see all sorts of contraptions that are a little scary to use. And I have to say, I'm a bit of a tech troglodyte. It might sound strange coming from someone who's in charge of designing tech products, but I really think our vision of bringing technology for healthcare outcomes into the bathroom is one that's not going to be successful until it comes in almost invisibly.
So it's going to take time. I think we acknowledge that. But let's go through the bathroom then. What are the most significant changes that you think are going to happen?
Two big ones are probably the toilet and the mirror. Toilet is sort of the opportunity to be doing testing, and it happens to be an apparatus that can learn lots of information about us in the course of us just doing what we do in the bathroom. So I think there are lots of opportunities for putting sensors, et cetera, into the toilet through the waste stream to just seamlessly watch over us, check for biomarkers, looking for early onset things.
Well, let's not be concerned about the niceties of the conversation here. Let's really just delve into the detail of what you're talking about.
Okay.
In terms of the biomarkers and how it's going to measure and the data that we can share using a toilet, how is it going to work?
One example, for instance, might be a couple who's looking to conceive, looking to start a family. The toilet could have the ability to collect urine and detect things like LH in the urine. Between that and watching over basal body temperature, you can start tracking over months and years before successful conception, the ovulation cycle.
So the toilet would obviously need to know who's using it.
Indeed. Yep. I think that's another premise of the bathroom, is that this would remain very personalized information. The sort of personification of the toilet would be anything that's happening in there is happening for you only. It's a private spot, or ideally is a private spot. So it does have that advantage over a lot of other places in your life where you don't have the advantage of having it all to yourself all at the same time. So I think at least my personal vision and our vision of this as a space is that information is collected, may even be kept there and processed there or parsed out anonymously and brought back again. But it's a contained environment in and of itself.
So it can collect urine, it can collect other bodily matter, feces as well.
Looking at feces and for early onset of colon cancer before it would be visible to the naked eye.
And this is therefore a much easier collection process, assuming that the toilet is manufactured for that purpose. But presumably then those samples need to get to a laboratory to be tested, or does the toilet do the testing?
I think that maybe the earliest vision would not be that the toilet is a replacement for the testing, but maybe rather an early warning system that would prompt perhaps your toilet to talk to your mirror, and your mirror to talk to your physician, and your physician to make a person-to-person sort of a Skype call via your smart mirror.
So, and so to be able to say, the hologram of the physician appears on the...
Yeah, right? You know, at a time and place that works for you, and to be able to say, hey, we've noticed something. And, you know, perhaps it's best that you don't wait until the end of the year to come in for a checkup. Maybe it's best that we schedule something together now, in which case it wouldn't supplant the idea that, you know, you have a very controlled collection and processing in a lab. There are, and obviously the analysis in the short term probably want to be done by an actual person. But you can imagine the future of deep learning and artificial intelligence could perhaps take that steps and steps further as we build trust.
So perhaps an early step could be a toilet that will detect if there's blood in your urine,
right,
or in your feces.
In your feces, yeah.
And maybe it's just a simple warning light to start with, but you understand what the light means, and then
could
you
be.
Can move on to the next step. And then clearly the tech will get more sophisticated so that a different form of analysis, maybe a more sophisticated analysis that
could
tell
be.
You extra things.
Yeah, so maybe 20, 30 years from now, when there is a little bit more understanding, or maybe when you've lived with the technology for a while, maybe the technology could learn about what the best means of communicating with you is. So maybe you are a person that would much rather get a text message about this with a link to calling your doctor, or perhaps you'd like to get a personal phone call from your doctor. You know, you start teasing out, and that's, I think, what we think the premise or the promise of artificial intelligence is to be working in the background and deliver things the way that we want it delivered, not just to constantly be turning on a red light. It's more care by exception, which is, I mean, the real promise is that you're going to live your life, right? Just live your best life. We're watching. Have the confidence to know that your bathroom is your sort of advocate in the background that's just watching out for you. You just go about your daily business, and we'll let you know if there's anything that needs to be actioned on.
And the cell phone probably is going to be the initial line of communication. You can already, as I mentioned, you can sync your bathroom scales to your cell phone, to Apple products, whatever device you happen to be using. So that would seem the most logical initial step.
Makes you wonder if that isn't why they're making them waterproof for that exact purpose, right? Potential disaster.
I thought they were just making them for that, you know, you drop it in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just drop it right in. Yeah. I think that would be a logical first step. Maybe not ideal from a user perspective, not the most in the background, invisible way to do it, but maybe a logical first step.
But we are all getting used to, I suppose, focusing on the phone to collect data of different forms. And it's becoming, I wouldn't say for everyone, but it's becoming a second nature for a lot of people to gravitate to the phone to look at those biomarkers.
Indeed. The only challenge to that, and we were very excited about the phone as a fantastic tool for new healthcare outcomes and doing all this, I believe within the next few years, the phone will start dropping away as a primary means of communicating. We're already seeing the Apple Watch making it irrelevant to have a phone, and, you know, hearables and some of these new interfaces changing the conversation away from being this, I'm staring at my phone and touching a screen with graphics on it, to much more of a conversational, much more speech. Other interfaces, I think, are going to start competing for our attention. So I think it would be, the phone is certainly ubiquitous now, makes sense to use it where we can use it. But I think the real vision would be, hey, I don't want to bring my phone into the bathroom. I want to do what I've always done in the bathroom. And it, you know, this technology should still be working for me.
So you talked about the toilet and you mentioned the mirror. Is there anything you can tell us about how we will interact with that mirror, which at the moment we use for doing our hair, for shaving,
right,
for cleaning our teeth, or, you know, if you want to look at yourself, and some people do when they're cleaning their teeth.
Right.
And what else?
Well, if you've been into any very high-end home bathroom fixtures, like lately, like I have, and came out screaming at the price tag, you're starting to see LCD displays, much more electronics being brought into what was traditionally just a boring medicine cabinet. So I think the logical conclusion, or the logical projection from that, rather, is cameras, sensors, means of displaying, not only seeing and gathering information, but displaying information back to us. So an example might be an infrared camera on the mirror that can look at your skin and see things that aren't visible to the naked eye, like oil deposits or dry skin and things like that, that could be critical to managing acne, for example, or psoriasis or something like that. And to be able to report back to you from a database based on this condition, and by the way, we're using a little augmented reality to overlay some colored graphics on your face as you're looking in the mirror to show you where this is happening, and we're presenting to you a potential plan for you know, a better care regimen for your skin. You can sort of see the logical progression. It's an interface that has the ability to talk both ways, magic mirror style.
I think the future of the bathroom cabinet is fascinating, and especially as you apply it to medications, which you mentioned, one of the biggest problems is simply getting some people to take their medications. They simply forget, or indeed, I think sometimes are a little resistant to taking them in the first place. But presumably, this is just in my imagination of this scenario, you have a cabinet who can remind you, who knows that there are 7 tablets to be taken in a week, and if only 6 of them have been used, whatever.
Yeah,
they can count them by a certain day in the week. You can see the benefits in that.
Right. I think if you add to that perhaps the future ability for a physician to take a peek inside your cabinet and be able to say, those are the 7 that you should be taking. That 8th and 9th, you should throw in the trash. Because that, statistically speaking, I think we're all going to be taking 6-8 medications throughout our 60s, 70s, 80s, hopefully our 90s. And maybe 1 of 3 senior citizens in the United States ends up in the emergency room due to some drug interaction or issue with their drug. So to be able to have somebody kind of watching over that pharmacy as well would certainly be nice. And maybe a future state even that we'd love to see is that perhaps your doctor could formulate, prescribe, and deliver all in one package. So you could get just your day's supply of pills at the right time for you.
It's interesting. I've had other guests on this podcast who will say that the future is reducing the number of medications in that cabinet, and that we won't be taking the 6 or 7 or 8, and that maybe we'll have a couple of fish oil supplements, and that's all we'll need
in
the future.
I certainly hope
so. Yeah,
yeah.
It would be great.
And perhaps if compliance could be improved, and if there was a means of interacting more frequently and earlier, a lot of these conditions that become chronic conditions could be avoided in your 20s, in your 30s, before it becomes an issue. And I think that's one of the great things about the bathroom as a ubiquitous part of your life, as something that you're interacting with every day. It has that advantage of being interacted with at least a couple times every day. So it has the power of numbers on its side, which a doctor that you see maybe once a year, maybe every 2 or 3 years, doesn't have.
Yeah, putting it like that, it is one of the few things that we do, the room that we visit all the way through our lives. It's never going to change.
Yeah, we never really thought about it too much until it's time to remodel.
But what you're just saying about especially medications is this really ties it in with longevity, the importance of just monitoring ourselves and perhaps having some sort of system that will remind us to do things.
Yeah.
Because that is half the battle. I think a lot of people know what they should be doing. They just don't do it.
Even if the reminder is to have a fantastic day, that you're doing great. It doesn't always have to be a negative reminder, oh, you forgot, don't forget to do this. It could be, don't forget to have a great day. You're doing fine. The reason you haven't heard from me is because everything's under control. Go out, go play golf, have that cheeseburger, whatever it is that maybe you've been worried about.
Or a Siri-style response that says, you're looking good today. You just done your hair. That looks,
right?
Looks nice today.
Yeah.
You've got a good color in your face.
Yeah.
Go off and enjoy yourself.
Get out there and knock them dead.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So what else? There's the mirror. There's the toilet. There's the medicine cabinet.
I think the floor could play a very interesting role. You mentioned that you have a connected scale. You can imagine building in sensors into the floor, into the tile itself. It could do not only very easily take weight, but there's even some research being done on gait analysis and balance, and to be able to get a little bit more subtle variations on that and in effect watch how we're walking and how we're standing could be the kind of thing that could detect some early issues before perhaps there's a fall. As people know, that can be a real devastating, and the bathroom's a nasty place for that.
Well, I was going to say, and you're absolutely right, falling, certainly for elderly people, is sometimes the beginning of the end. If it's a broken hip or a major bone that is affected, life seems to go downhill very rapidly after that point, and often it is the slippery bathroom floor that is as a result of that. So clearly something, an early warning sign within the floor, maybe just to say, look, your floor's wet today, be careful.
That's fantastic, yeah. Just as something as simple as that might be, you really only have to avoid one issue and have it be a lifesaver.
How close are we to this utopian bathroom?
I think that we're close from a technology perspective. I think everything could be implemented in fairly short order. I think we could mitigate some of the regulatory issues by perhaps not immediately jumping to a smart bathroom that's not only self-diagnosing but self-prescribing, but just have it be a hub that connects you to important caregivers. I think it's actually some of the more basic things that are holding us up, like the fact that it's you know, a 10-year period at probably at closest before you would go and even have the idea of replacing some of these objects that have been built to last. You know, toilets and sinks and mirrors are built to last for decades. So that's a big one. I think the other big one is that traditionally the businesses that install this equipment, the businesses that make this equipment, all of these parts, this is not their stock and trade. They're a little scared to get into technology. And admittedly so, it's a challenge that's got high barriers to entry. So I think those kind of very base things will be the challenges to overcome. But those scare me a lot less than not having any means to do it. We've got the means to do it, and we have a vision for what could be done. It seems like we can get together. But it'll be some disparate groups, a contractor and a sink manufacturer and a tech company working together would be a strange bedfellows.
So you have the vision. As you look at your own longevity and the years, the decades, hopefully ahead of you, how do you incorporate these ideas? Maybe they're not part of the fixtures and fittings of your bathroom yet, but as you say, a lot of the technology exists. And I see you're wearing a ring with a sensor right now. We actually interviewed the creator of that ring a few weeks ago on the podcast. You're obviously fascinated by the gathering of data and how it can help you.
Yeah, but as I mentioned, I'm also a tech troglodyte. So I'm pretty painfully aware and try to stay aware of the fact that people aren't in love with the technology. The relationship that should be built is not a relationship with technology, and you shouldn't be creating this smart character in your bathroom for the sake of a smart character in your bathroom, but rather for the end goal of sort of not interacting with it, to have those great days. And I think that's why I'm excited about this premise, is that I'm not in love with technology for technology's sake. I'm in love with the potential end state where we actually go back maybe even to a simpler life. Behavior change is difficult. It can be done, and it's a noble pursuit. But trying to get things to blend with existing habits and ceremonies is really the way to get adoption and get people to build a relationship with products and services such that they really love them and integrate them seamlessly into their lives. So I think that's a better way to go at it.
And as you move forward in your life, do you think much about your own personal longevity? Do you think about what might be in 50 years' time, or however long you have on this planet?
Yeah,
and do you adapt to your life accordingly?
I do plan to live forever. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. Yes, I think there's something personal in the opinion that technology should become in the background and constantly working. I think that we will need help as we get older. And I think that's something that I'm aware of as we start looking at the realities of living into our 80s and 90s, is that without some help, without some artificial intelligence, some augmentation of our lives, we may just not be equipped to be able to handle life that far ahead. So to some degree, I think I'm hoping that this will happen within my lifetime. I suspect that it'll probably be in my son's lifetime that some of this will come together, but I'm hoping that we can design the help for ourselves so that we can live good lives well into aging.
That's what it's all about. Eric Olson, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
And just before we go, a reminder that there are several ways to listen to us. You can visit our Live Long and Master Aging website, which is llamapodcast.com. That's LLAMA podcast.com. We're also on Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, and of course, iTunes. And if you enjoy what we do, a 5-star review at iTunes would be hugely appreciated. It helps us to grow the podcast and hopefully secure its future. Many thanks for listening. FlexBeam is a portable red light therapy device that's now being used by leading athletes, including the Norwegian tennis player Casper Ruud.
Whenever you put the FlexBeam on, you feel it starts to work right away. I need something that can help repair all the fibers that I have broken in the serves.
The infrared light penetrates our skin and makes the muscle tissue recover faster. FlexBeam, I keep it with me all the time.
Recharge Health is offering Llama Podcast listeners an $80 discount on the purchase of a FlexBeam device. Go to the website recharge.health and use the code LLAMA at checkout. That's LLAMA. You'll also find the link in the show notes for this episode.